You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today, Friday, June 29th, 2018. Pay attention. Pay attention. There are a number of items today that we need to keep our eyes on, keep focused on, a number of what I would call hinge moment items. So, what do I mean by that, you might ask? Well, all right, there are certain things that are happening behind the scenes that are out there in the news. And they're just kind of hanging out there, and people are looking at them and accepting them at face value, when in fact they're hinge moments, events that are kind of like the domino effect. These have been put out there for a specific reason, and the timing is everything. The events are everything. These are going to lead to bigger things. Let me give you one example here, and I'm going to give you several examples, including the shooting yesterday. You may look at that and say, well, okay, that's the shooting at the newspaper yesterday. You may look at that and say, well, that is what it is. It's merely a shooting at a small newspaper by a person with a grudge against the workers there. And I get that. That's correct. You're correct. But there are issues with respect to all of these items, including the hearings yesterday. These are different, disparate events, they all have certain things in common. And I'm seeing some things here in our evaluation internally here, based on our investigation, are leading, we're looking at some things happening, and it's going to have a tremendously positive effect now for the nation, for people who want to see justice, and I think it's coming. And these are signs that it is coming, that people are working behind the scenes. But there's an equally forceful push back against the truth coming out. I'm going to do my best to explain what I just said through this broadcast. So I ask that you listen to this entire broadcast. And if you like what you hear, please share this on your social media. Tell others about the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour, Doug Hagmann Radio Show, hashtag DHRS. I haven't made it really a thing. Hashtag DHRS. Hopefully we can. Spread the news about this program, please. Because there is a lot of information out here. And we could be buried for a long time in headlines and in media reports that don't mean a lot. But there are certain stories that will serve, I believe, as these hinges for the door, that open the door to bigger truths out there. For example, when you start looking at the arrest of a Clinton campaign official who was arrested Tuesday on child sex abuse charges. Now, again, sometimes things are what they are. It's kind of a redundant, stupid saying, I suppose. But sometimes there are, they serve as windows, or like I said, as hinges for the door for bigger things to come out. And I believe this is one of those cases. A guy by the name of Joel Davis, 20, how old is this character? Is a rather young guy. Joel Davis. I just had the indictment up here. Hang on a second. Joel Davis was caught in possession of very explicit child sex images and had attempted to get access to children as young as 2 years of age for sex. Anything above infancy or infant and beyond. Okay, this guy is a sick puppy. Now, Davis was the chairman of the international campaign to stop rape and general violence in conflict. Think about that. Here's a guy that has inserted himself into this campaign, the international campaign to stop rape and gender violence in conflict. He worked on Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign. Now, the Daily UK has multiple reports. Davis allegedly told undercover FBI agents that he was sexually interested in children of all ages. He is accused of sending the agents. There were undercover agents working this and other cases. If you look in the indictment, which I'll find and I'll put in the program notes, it's a difficult read. Let me tell you, it's explicit, it's graphic, and if you don't have the stomach for it, don't read it. But it's important because this is part of a larger ongoing investigation. And this is something, and I want to mention this as well, because behind the scenes, we don't talk about ongoing investigations from our angle, from our position as licensed investigators, multi-state licensed investigators. We don't talk about ongoing investigations, except in circumstances where it's warranted and it's okay and it's beyond the time that secrecy needs to be maintained. Working with people such as Russ Dizdar and Craig Sawyer. Now, when I say working with them, I'm not talking about on the ground, boots on the ground with them. No, I'm talking about sharing information, notes, and what have you. And of course, Craig Sawyer coming on our program, Vets for Child Rescue, and his massive number of operations his crew has got going. There are things going on behind the scenes that we don't talk about, but now, in this case, okay, this Joel Davis is part of a larger contingent of individuals associated with that Clinton campaign. Remember Wienergate, remember the sexting of an underage 15-year-old girl by Anthony Weiner. Remember all of the talk of the pictures and videos and documentation beyond the top secret special access program material on the Weiner laptop and such and the devices. This is at the periphery of that. This Davis case is, I'm not going to say part of that, but it touches upon the outer edges of that larger case. Now, this Davis, 22 years old. So you got to understand, you're looking at a very young man here, okay, who is perverted, in my view, based on the documentation beyond comprehension. These are the allegations. Understand this case has not been adjudicated. So we are saying alleged. But if you read the indictment, you'll get a taste. Bad choice of words. You get an understanding of what this guy is all about. But he did go into detail in the text messages with undercover agents working, undercover FBI agents working child sex trafficking rings. Now, I'm not going to dedicate the entire program to the child sex trafficking. So those people who don't like to discuss that or hear about that, just hang with me for a moment. This is one of several issues that I will connect and show you how all of this is playing out by the end of the show. But the indictment and prosecutors, the indictment shows and prosecutors have stated that Davis repeatedly asked one undercover agent to take naked and sexually explicit pictures and videos of the children and send those to him. He allegedly went into detail in the text messages about what sexual activities he intended to engage in with the children and so on. It's horrific. It really is. Now, Following his arrest, Davis allegedly admitted to officers that he had abused a 13-year-old boy in the past and that he kept child porn images on his phone. Having started an organization that pushed for the end of sexual violence, Davis displayed the highest degree of hypocrisy by his alleged attempts to sexually exploit multiple minors. This according to FBI Assistant Director in Charge William F. Sweeney Jr. Now consider that statement. And the statement I refer to is inserting himself into starting an organization and inserting himself into this environment to allegedly save or prevent the very activity in which he is involved. That is an important trait, a characteristic, a forensic profile that needs, that exists in virtually every other case I'm going to be talking about today. I understand that as the underlayment, the architecture, or the foundation of every case I'm going to be talking about, every incident, every situation. Just keep that in the back of your mind. The insertion by individuals into areas that they supposedly are fighting against, and using that position to exploit their perversity or their crimes, kind of like somebody, an embezzler, getting a position at a bank, okay, or working in the a fraud department at a bank. It's that kind of thing that's going on here. And this is telling. This is a forensic profile trait that exists just in about every case that we have seen. This is a common factor, and this also is something that we have to. I'm going to be talking about the shooting in Annapolis at the newspaper there, and why that is important, and what is how that is being used or will be used in the context of fake news. All right, and why things are happening to us personally, and could happen to you, things are falling into place. Things are finally. I think just hang with me, and by the end of the show, you'll see how everything kind of fits together and how everything is being maneuvered into place. And once you see it through a specific perspective or prism, at that point you'll say, okay, now I kind of see what to watch out for. And now I see how things are working toward a specified or specific objective. Just about everything that we see taking place has got those traits. But this is important. So I just want to mention, keep your eyes on this case. This will be that case that leads to other cases. And the connection to the Clinton campaign, although peripheral, is still existent. So keep your eye on this Joel Davis case. Joel Davis allegedly solicited an undercover officer who he thought to be a willing participant, a fellow perverse individual, to send sexually explicit videos of his 9-year-old daughter and even set up a sexual encounter between himself and a 2-year-old. This is sick. But again, who's this Joel Davis guy? Joel Davis, chairman, International Campaign to Stop Rape and General Violence and Conflict. It's a charity group and part of Hillary's 2016 presidential campaign. All right, just keep your eyes on this. I'm going to stop with this particular case, but know this has far-reaching tentacles, and it does involve, again, at its periphery, involves what Vets for Child Rescue does. I'm not saying they worked on this case. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that, understand, these are the individuals that Craig Sawyer and his team are going after. And it's interesting, the people who insert themselves into organizations designed to stop the exploitation are the very people who are doing the exploitation in many cases, this being one of them. And understand that characteristic. When you find someone inserting themselves into a situation, into a case, you have to take a look at that individual. I'm just going to mention the Seth Rich homicide. Take a look at individuals, specific individuals. And this, in the Seth Rich case, which, by the way, 2 years coming up in July, next month, here in a couple of weeks, unsolved homicide. Now, I'm not going to mention anyone. You can find, there's a prolific amount of information on the internet about Seth Rich and about the homicide investigation. There's information out there under Matt Couch, just like it sounds, Matt Couch. Individuals writing within that, individuals connected to Matt Couch, both on social networking and on the website. I'm not going to print or redo any of that. Just pay attention to that. I'm not endorsing Matt Couch. I'm just saying there's information contained in the drops there on social media. I don't want to be cryptic about this. In this situation, I want to be very careful because of the amount of litigation and the individual, and the fact that this is still unsolved. I want to be careful of what I say. But just look at, for example, I'm just using this as an example, look at the individuals inserting themselves into specific investigations, in this case, the Seth Rich investigation, inserting themselves into that investigation. Kind of the same, in my view, the same principle as the Joel Davis case, starting a charity to prevent what you're actually involved in. You got to listen between the lines here, okay, in that case. We're talking about specific MO, specific methods of operation that seem to be the same regardless of the case, regardless of the incident. Just keep that in the back of your mind as I take you through other cases as well, other points of interest, news items that are presented one way, when in fact, if you take a look at them a little bit differently, you're going to see, again, by the end of this episode, you're going to see what I'm saying here. Okay, let me kind of take a left turn here. Just follow me on this. A lot of dots to connect. Yesterday, of course, we saw the testimony of Ray, Christopher Ray, and Rod Rosenstein testify before the House Judiciary Committee. Now, in many respects, there were many items that caught my attention. There's a 6-minute clip I'd like to play if I have the time, an exchange between Rosenstein and I want to say Jim Jordan, but it was Louis Gohmert and Rosenstein that I thought was very telling. But one that's glossed over, missed, and perhaps most important, is a very brief 1-minute exchange between Christopher Ray and Ted Lieu. Now, this is subsequent to the struck testimony yesterday behind closed doors that I referenced in an earlier program. Okay, again, these are wildly distinct and distinctly different points I'm bringing out. I'm tossing it out here right now. It's kind of a bookmark in this particular broadcast. But this 1-minute exchange, not getting a lot of play, this is referencing the deep state, the organization, this unofficial permanent bureaucracy that exists within our government that's operating against the freedom of our nation. Interestingly, this deep state was referenced by Ted Lieu and asked Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, about this in a manner that made it appear, shall we say, mocking. And again, this is out of order, shall we say, but I'm using it as a bookmark for this broadcast. Listen carefully to this exchange, and I'm just going to hold it here, but this is a one-minute exchange. This is about the deep state, and I'm going to apologize in advance about the sound quality of this. Hopefully this will come through pretty clear, but let me play it now. And here it is. I'm playing it right now in studio. So here, listen to this one-minute clip.
At the closed hearing of Peter Strzok yesterday, and I just have to say my Republican colleagues have mischaracterized his testimony. A number of his text messages have been misconstrued and mischaracterized. It is deeply ironic that my Republican colleagues are yelling and screaming about document production when they refuse to release his unredacted transcript from yesterday's closed hearing. They need to release it to American people. We need to see Peter Strzok's testimony, and he needs to be at an open hearing. I hope my Republican colleagues will do that. Now, let me move to something that the president said in an official statement on Twitter. He said a number of times that we've got a deep state. So I asked in another hearing, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, was there a deep state at the State Department? He laughed and he basically said, no, there was not. So, Director Wray, I'm going to ask you, is there a deep state at the FBI?
Congressman, I've never completely understood the term deep state. What I can tell you is that we have 37,000 men and women working in field offices all over the country and in legate offices all over the world. And they are people of character, of courage, of principle, of selflessness, and of patriotism. And that's the FBI that I see.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I hope the president stops attacking the FBI. And then let me...
Okay, and stop it there. Stop it right there. Hopefully you heard that. This is Christopher Wray denying... I don't even know what a deep state is or what is referenced by the deep state. Notice here in the past week or so, Donald Trump mentioning in Twitter remarks about the deep state in the context, of course, this Russian collusion investigation by Mueller and by the Mueller operatives. And again, against the backdrop of the Strzok testimony and yesterday's open door hearings where Christopher Wray, head of the FBI, and Rod Rosenstein were giving testimony. Okay, this might be a good point. And again, pardon me, I apologize in advance if this seems rather chaotic, mentally chaotic here. But I'm working toward an end point. I want to show you something here, and I think it'll become evident by the end of the broadcast. Yeah, I'm not off my meds, okay, or I never started my meds or whatever, but just bear with me on this. This is a six-minute audio segment of an exchange between Louis Gohmert and Rod Rosenstein. Now, to watch it would be much better. It gives you a better sense of the hubris of Rosenstein. But go ahead, play the clip, listen to the content, listen to the subjects addressed, listen to Rod Rosenstein's responses about the matters being discussed. Specifically the non-denials, but just take the whole thing in its entirety. And again, in advance, apologies for the mental chaotic kind of approach to this, but I think it'll make sense in the end. Go ahead and roll clip two.
Deputy Attorney General, a common theme, it seems, to many of your responses has been basically, I wasn't here then, that wasn't me, I didn't personally do that. I didn't redact Judge Contreras' name from the documents so Congress couldn't see that he was friends with Peter Strzok. That was someone else. But you have added quite pointedly to Mr. Jordan that I am the Deputy Attorney General, and you certainly are. But the actions of your subordinates, which are all employees of the Department of Justice, aren't you vouching for those? Don't those people respond to you?
Those people all ultimately report to me, yes, sir.
And that would include when Bruce Orr's office was directly next to yours, I believe. Isn't that correct? And he worked for you?
He worked in the Deputy Attorney General's office. I think it was a couple of doors down, but yes.
Okay, a couple of doors down. Well, we're aware of some of the events that occurred before your confirmation as the Deputy Attorney General. However, some of your team members certainly were involved. So I want to ask, was Tashina Gahar your deputy, or Trisha Anderson involved in any stage of drafting, editing, or approving the four FISA applications to spy on Carter Page?
I wasn't sure if you were directing that question to me, but Congressman, sitting here right now, I don't know exactly who was involved in drafting what FISA application.
So just to be clear, apparently, Director Ray, you have to answer for the Deputy Attorney General about FISA applications he signed?
No, you were asking about...
The four applications to spy on Carter Page. And I think you've been a bit vague on whether you even signed FISA.
Let me try to clarify for you, if I may.
Well, did you sign the fourth FISA application?
I approved the filing of a...
Okay, now you say you approved that application.
Sir.
Now, that's going
that's
before
job.
A
that's
FISA...
That's my job, sir.
That's your job, okay. You approved it. Well, when you approve a FISA application, in your mind, does that mean you should read it and understand what's part of it?
You should certainly understand what's part of it, sir.
But you're parsing words, so that doesn't mean you need to read it, in your opinion. Is that correct?
It depends on the circumstances, sir, and...
telling you, being a former felony state judge...
Yes.
If I had somebody like you come before me, and now it was revealed later that the guy that signed and approved an application for a warrant had not even read the application that would allow spying on somebody,
that would be atrocious.
I would look at everything he signed from then on with a jaundiced eye. And I'm telling you, I was concerned about
even... Give me a chance to explain, sir.
Well... You have. You've said...
No, I have not.
Approve it.
Well, I did approve it.
I didn't ask that question because you've said you approved it, but you took out the words that you read it.
The gentleman from Texas will
suspend. And so it is my time.
The gentleman from Texas will suspend. I just want to make it clear to Deputy Attorney General, you will be afforded a full opportunity to respond once his time has expired, if he wants to yield to you during that
time. My time continued to run while the chairman took up some of my time. So
you'll have that too.
And actually, I was being interrupted. I did not have a question. I was taking the words that the Deputy Attorney General himself said. So, well, let me ask you about this. You said earlier Bruce Orr was not working on the Russia investigation. Let me ask you.
To my knowledge.
To your knowledge. Did you not know that Bruce Orr was meeting with Christopher Steele, getting the information about the dossier and supplying that information to the FBI at the same time his wife Nellie was working for Fusion GPS that was helping Hillary Clinton? Did you not know he was doing that for the FBI?
Correct.
You did not know that?
Correct.
Okay, so he officed a couple of doors down, but you had no idea that he was actually the go-between to get that information. So when did you find out about that?
So as I said, sir, the Inspector General is reviewing these FISAs, and I hope I have an opportunity to explain.
Well, let me just say, you look at the deputy, look at the summary. Mr. Horowitz said, we did not have confidence that Strzok's decision to prioritize Russia investigation over following up on the mid-year related investigation discovered on the Wiener laptop was free from bias. Pretty clear to most of us, bias did affect that decision.
The time of the gentleman has expired. The Deputy Attorney General may respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I thought you were asking me questions, sir. I completely understand your concern. And this FISA process is being reviewed by the Inspector General. If he finds some problem with it, I'll respect that. Now, we don't talk about FISAs. It's illegal for us to talk about FISAs. And this particular example is a result of the Intelligence Committee. Certain information was declassified, and so I'm comfortable talking about that. you have to understand in context, sir, that the department had made the decision to disclose the existence of a FISA to the House and Senate before I got there. Now, what I signed was what's called a renewal application, already been approved three different times by a federal judge. It was signed under oath by an FBI agent who attested that it was true and correct. Now, if he was wrong, we'll hold him accountable. But let's allow the process to conclude before we jump to conclusions about that, because I assure you, sir, I'll be just as offended as you if I find there was some incorrect information in that application.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since we've learned that he relies heavily on people that were part of his team to do these applications, I don't think we can get to the truth until we question Tashina Gahar and Trisha Anderson, and that would also include why she slow walks the notices of NSC meetings to the Attorney General when she's working for the DAG just to make him look bad. So we need to get those two people in here and question them.
Mr. Chairman, if there's any evidence of wrongdoing, sir, by anyone on my staff or anyone in the department, I would expect you to give them fair process, bringing the information to my attention or the Inspector General's attention. Let's hear both sides and then let's reach the conclusion. I think what's important to understand, and I understand the FISA process is very obscure to most people, but these are essentially search warrant affidavits. A federal agent has to swear under oath that everything in that application is true. And then there are review processes within the FBI and within the department. Ultimately, the decision is made by a federal judge. There can be mistakes, and we'll find out if there are any mistakes in this one. But it's not a matter of just slapping a document and signing it. It's a very thorough process. And in that particular case, four different federal judges found probable cause. The Inspector General will review it, and I'll await those conclusions, sir. But I just would encourage you not to jump to any conclusions that I or anybody else did anything wrong until we have all the information.
Now, let me dispense with the obvious here. What you just heard is an exchange between Louis Gohmert and Rod Rosenstein, questioning Rosenstein about Bruce Orr specifically in the FISA process. Now, Bruce Orr, the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice in the National Security Division. Also referenced in that exchange, Tashina Gohar, who was the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice National Security Division, and Trisha Beth Anderson, the FBI Office of Legal Counsel, just to fill you in. And again, addressing now just the obvious from that audio clip. Rosenstein said that he never knew Bruce Orr, who was just three doors down from him in Maine Justice, was communicating with Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele. Rosenstein said he never knew Bruce Orr's wife was an employee of Fusion GPS and communicating with the FBI. And Rosenstein says he cannot imagine a scenario where the Department of Justice, National Security Division, and FBI would deliberately mislead the FISA court. Okay? This is amid the investigation of the mid-year examination, the investigation into the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And what was a part of the email investigation? Again, this now, I'm not leaving the obvious and going toward the periphery here. What was a part of that, especially toward September, October, November? It was the Wiener laptop, the documents on the Wiener laptop. Now, okay, in the other aspect of this, obvious but perhaps not so obvious, the reference to the start date of this official investigation of Donald Trump, the official starting date, July 31st, 2016. The question here is, could that start date have been much earlier? Now consider the denial of Christopher Wray about the deep state. Consider Rosenstein, his smugness and his hubris in answering questions, well, I wasn't here then, etc. That exchange, along with Christopher Wray addressing the existence of the deep state, would tell me, and I think that this is a reasonable speculation based on investigation and I don't want to say surveillance, but based on pure investigation of everything that I've seen, you're looking at an official or at a start date of the infiltration of Donald Trump and his in the of Donald Trump and his campaign team, not in 2016, but in 2015, long before this was ever thought to exist. There was an illegal surveillance operation. What I'm trying to tell you is there was an illegal surveillance operation operated by the deep state that Ray denies knowing exists, that Rosenstein references, or being, and I quote, a career employee. Notice that designation, career employee, meaning a permanent bureaucrat, meaning a member of the deep state. Words are important here. And there was some crosstalk and overtalk, but a couple of takeaways. The obvious, of course, the incredulity that Rosenstein wouldn't know what was going on. His denials because he wasn't in that position at that time with respect to the FISA, initial FISA request, but ultimately signed off on the last one, which apparently he didn't read. Again, strains credulity. But the larger picture, drawing out now the larger picture, what others are not addressing in my view, maybe they are and I'm just not seeing it, is the fact that you've got an operation that exists long before it's acknowledged to the public and to Congress and to the members of the oversight that Attorney General or Inspector General Horowitz has found and is bringing to the public. So I just a recap here of this episode so far. I started off with the reference to Joel Davis, that the alleged child porn kid in the Clinton campaign, how he inserted himself and started this charity group or this interventionist group to prevent child pornography and child exploitation, when in fact he was the head of that. Okay, and at the periphery of the Clinton campaign, the timing of which, by the way, it's interesting when you look and overlay the timing of all of these events. The Wiener laptop discovery back in November, well, I'm sorry, it would be September of 2016, made public late October of 2016, and just right before the elections. And now you've got this exchange, one of many from the open door sessions yesterday between Gohmert and Rosenstein and the lesser party Ray here. And earlier I played the Ray denial of the deep state. Okay, I know that this is seemingly, okay, so what? You just threw a whole bunch of stuff on the table, and how does this all connect? What are you talking about? Oh, hang with me here, because I'm going to throw some more stuff on the table. Oh, and not the least of which I mentioned that shooting at the Annapolis newspaper, which, again, hold that thought. Now what we're seeing pushed out, especially in social media spheres, is the revelation of a journalist too. I don't know how many people recall the existence of what was known as a journalist. It's obviously a play off the journalist term journalist, but an off-the-record private discussion group of left-wing journalists, similar to the controversial journalist cabal, has been discovered. You're going to be hearing about this. All right? This group, it's hosted on Google Groups, was discovered after messages from New York Magazine journalist Jesse Singal were leaked. This listserv, or the listserv, per its about page, aims to provide an off-the-record discussion forum for left-of-center journalists. In other words, deep state players. People that are in the know and are advancing an agenda rather than reporting the news. And that list also includes authors, academics, and others. Now, the the entirety, this Journalist One and Journalist Two, the concept of journalist, meaning this organized group of members of the media that are advancing the objectives of the deep state, that's been around for 8 years. But now there's notations here that there's over 400 members that are part of a second grouping. Members including New York Times best-selling authors and Ivy League academics and magazine editors and other public intellectuals. Many people who influence public discourse through their written work and even their spoken word. All right. So that is it coming out. Okay. Now, again, I apologize. Follow me. So you're hearing rumblings of a second journalist or second iteration of the journalist cabal. The first iteration were journalist members reportedly coordinating messages in favor of Barack Obama, the Democratic Party or the Democratic Socialist Party, at that time against Sarah Palin and the Republican Party or the conservatives. The actual initial journalist was founded in 2007. And it was closed down in early 2010. Now we find a second or a resurgence of this list. These people are forming the narrative. What the people, the masses hear on CNN and MSNBC, their coordinated messages and an arm and extension of the deep state. All right, that's what's taking place. Now, let me move again to what I mentioned earlier, and that is the shooting. This is all gonna make sense here momentarily. The shooting at the Anne Arundel County newspaper office, the Baltimore Sun subsidiary newspaper. It's happened yesterday. As I mentioned, you have a young man who took a shotgun, reportedly. His name, Jared W. Ramis. He allegedly opened fire on the news staff of Maryland's The Capital Gazette newspaper, again, a subsidiary of the Baltimore Sun. It came out shortly thereafter that Ramis had a long-standing battle with the newspaper dating back about a decade, one that resulted in lawsuits being filed and the man appearing to create a Twitter account in which he repeatedly bashed the Maryland newspaper for years. Suddenly, he takes a shotgun, goes to this newspaper, and fires shots into the window, killing five people, injuring others. And that happened yesterday. And you can read about the lawsuit, and you can read about all of the particulars, the details of the Ramis's problem with the newspaper. That's fine. It's Breitbart's got it. Other locations has it. Ramis sued the Capital Gazette for defamation. He sued him for defamation after they reported in 2011 about his conviction for criminal harassment, and that was the core case here. All right, and Breitbart has some pretty good coverage on this, but that's really not the point I'm getting at. That's what's making the news. But what's the blowback from this? And why did I throw this in with a child molester, with the alleged child molester, that is, with the testimony from Ray, the exchange between Louis Gohmert and Rod Rosenstein? Why did I throw all of this together in the journalist, the mention of that? Okay. In the shooting that happened yesterday. Because these are all different events. And by each one, they're hinge moment events. Hinges that will open the door to larger issues. The existence of the deep state, for example, being a common theme here. But there's something else taking place. Something else, if you go back into the latter part, well, go back into 2016, when Barack Hussein Obama had referenced, had created his view of what fake news is. This is documented by Cheryl Atkinson, 2016, September, Barack Obama calling out fake news. Again, his version or his idea of what fake news is. And I know this sounds rather convoluted and complicated, like I've lost my mind here. But again, just as I'm walking through this, what are we seeing explode now on social media? What's going on social media right now that we know is controlled? We know social media is controlled in addition to these algorithms, topic-driven. But what's showing up here? There are two things that are showing up. Of course, you've got the anti-gun lobby, the anti-Second Amendment lobby, saying, see, guns are bad. Look what happened at this newspaper yesterday. But predictably, you've got people coming out even before the police left the scene or began processing the crime scene yesterday. You've got people coming out and saying, see, Donald Trump is mean or he's calling out the media for fake news. And you've got this unhinged man taking a long gun and shooting up a newspaper. That's the narrative that's being driven right now with respect to that shooting incident in Maryland. Now step back with all of these incidents I mentioned. You're seeing the narrative, the explanations being shaped by the very people I mentioned in that journalist category, the operatives of the deep state, the members of the media, and the social media shaping the discussion points for what exists imminently ahead. You've got the journalists and even their supporters who are blaming President Donald Trump for his harsh words about the media using fake news, the mantra of fake news, for example, as the reason for the hostility and perhaps even the reason, the trigger mechanism that Ramos used to shoot up this newspaper, which is the furthest thing from the truth. The truth of the matter is quite simple. This guy had a beef with the paper. At this point, this is what it appears to be. And, of course, couldn't settle it in court, so settled it with a shotgun. Now, almost as if on cue, you've got the regular people coming out. You've got Gillibrand coming out and calling for an assault weapons ban, despite the fact that assault weapons had nothing to do with this incident in the wake of this newspaper shooting. But you've got this not-so-subtle but yet underreported aspect on social media saying, do you see the damage that's being done by President Donald Trump by taking the media to task? Well, who's he taking to task? Not Fox News or not the people who are reporting the truth, not the honest media, but the journalists, basically, the ones who are working for the deep state to form the narrative. That's who he's taking to task. Yet he's being blamed for his harsh words are being blamed for this mass slaughter, this massacre at the newspaper in Anne Arundel County, the newspaper owned by the Baltimore Sun. Okay, the Capital Gazette newspaper. Case in point, a tweet. I'm not even going to mention account name on this, just the contents of this Twitter message. Donald Trump has repeatedly and angrily branded the press as a threat, as the enemy, as a danger to America. Someone just shot up a newsroom and killed journalists. He has blood on his hands. That same Twitter account, in response to Melania Trump, her thoughts and prayers going out. That same individual saying, your husband calls journalists the enemy and has poisoned his brainwashed fan base against them. He's complicit in this crime, and so are you. There were countless others, including another one by a journalist. A shooting in the newspaper office after years of journalists being called the enemy of the people. I've heard so many Trump supporters call for murdering the press. Really? Where? Now they're celebrating all over the internet. Really? I don't see that. We're heading somewhere very dark. And that same – well, you get the idea. I don't think I have to go further. You get the idea. Can you see the narrative that's being shaped now? Can you see what is taking place now? Remember from my previous programs, the communists in power are coming after our Second Amendment rights and our First Amendment rights as well, both of them. The deep state that does exist in the form of its permanent bureaucracy, they are coming after your Second Amendment rights, my Second Amendment rights, and our First Amendment rights as well. And they're using these events, they're exploiting events like this to do it, and they're also diverting attention away from the existence of the deep state. You heard it in that one sound clip, Ted Lieu and Christopher Wray. Christopher Wray denying any knowledge of what the deep state is. And then the actual, shall we say, the process of attempting to reverse the 2016 election. Yes, I know it's 2018. To reverse the will of the American people, ultimately to take down our nation through this Mueller investigation. While people like Louis Gohmert and others are attempting to expose the misdeeds of the Department of Justice and the FBI, the hubris by both the Department of Justice and the FBI, Wray and Rosenstein, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein and Christopher Wray, is evident. Their actions, of course, are they're attempting to cover up their previous actions, and of course, when the time period with respect to when the infiltration of the Donald Trump campaign team began, it was not July 31st, 2016, but long before that, which makes everything that we have said, all of our investigative analyses, plural, to this point, that this was a sting operation designed to take down Donald Trump in favor of Hillary Clinton, which verifies everything I've been saying and everything others in the know have been saying. But we have a machine, a mechanism, that is this deep state mechanism working hand in hand with the media. And now you might ask, okay, well, what about the child, the perversion you talked about the young man arrested for attempted child pornography charges? What about Joel Davis, member of the Hillary Clinton campaign team, inserting himself into, by the way, and the other part of that, inserting himself into the venue that supposedly checks children? Or protects children, I should say. The very prey that this predator feeds upon. And at the periphery of this, the Wiener laptop and all of the contents of the devices toward the end of the election cycle, October. Of 2016, September, October of 2016. The FBI and the Department of Justice, how they handled that is all part of this. So you've got all of these events that have certain things in common. Boy, I hope I made sense so far. I hope I am making sense. And if not, you know what? You can't hit every ball out of the park. Or you can't get a home run every time. What I'm trying to do is show you the MO of the deep state and how we are being gamed, how the deep state is fighting, because the exposure is so great now. And the it's interesting because the deep state, the members of the deep state, are not even attempting to cover their blatant actions, the overt, and I don't want to use the phrase false flags, but their exploitation of events like this shooting yesterday to capitalize upon the shooting yesterday, stepping over the bodies of the dead to say, you know what, it's all Donald Trump's fault. It's all the people who are peddling fake news, including and especially Donald Trump. That's the bigger issue here. Pizzagate, remember that? Fake news. Debunked and discredited. Well, was it really? No. Pedogate, debunked and discredited. No. Mentioned Vets for Child Rescue, what they're doing. You can see, for example, you can see now where people are being identified as predators and pedophiles. You can see things right today. Donald Trump, by his very existence in the Oval Office, has now broken down the walls of protection in many cases against the perversity and the pedophiles, against the members of the deep state who are attempting to communize or make the United States a collective country, a communist utopia. You've got this out-of-control Mueller Russian witch hunt that's being exposed, and yet the hubris of people like Rod Rosenstein for all the world to see. And then the exposure now of the journalists, the people who are were facilitating this fake news narrative. You got people out there, they don't know what to believe. You've got many people who are signing on to, well, we've got to get rid of fake news. We've got to do something about fake news. And of course, all of Silicon Valley is signed on to, well, we've got to stop this fake news. Twitter, we've got to identify fake news. Working with the journalists, working with the deep state. And how they are going to accomplish this is by using these events, like the shooting yesterday, to take away our rights to report the news, or to report on the news, I should say, in the context in which we do, to take away our First Amendment rights. And of course, because it was done with a gun, our Second Amendment rights. The greater the exposure of the spying campaign, and all of the misdeeds and criminal actions of the deep state, the greater the exposure, the greater the pushback. You may think that these are not these events are unrelated. Well, they're related to the extent that the outcomes are being controlled. And it's clear now, especially with the identification of a second journalist list, pardon that duplication of words there, in the fact that the first one never went away, you can identify those people who are assisting in the formation of the narrative that we've got to stop the criticism of CNN and MSNBC. You've got to stop the criticism of the Brian Stelters. You've got to stop that criticism of Joe Scarborough. You can't call people like Jim Acosta fake news. And it's because of the President of the United States has ginned up, encouraged this violence against the media. That's why we had the event yesterday. It's the MO that works. It's a proven, it's got a proven track record. And caught in the crossfire. I mentioned, the Seth Rich murder as well. The WikiLeaks, the exposure of Pedogate and Pizzagate via WikiLeaks and Podesta being called fake news. Yet it exists, and it's undeniable in the various elements of circumstantial evidence. It's virtually undeniable when you look at it in its entirety. Okay, when you look at the entire picture together, and not just one piece of the mosaic. So you've got all of this taking place. Can you see how it's also accelerating? Watch social media over the weekend. Watch what happens. Watch the narrative be changed. They're coming for the Second and First Amendments. And it's really at the heart of the deep state, built within the infrastructure of the government and the media. I hope this made sense. If not, just send me go ahead and email me and say, man, you're off your rocker. Contact information in the program description box. May God bless you.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.